Caller 10, 800-636-1067. You're winning two tickets to see Disturbed. It's the Sickness 25th Anniversary Tour. Monday, March 17th, Capital One Arena. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets to the show and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events. Everybody is excited about the start of the football season, but we do know that folks around us have lost family members and friends recently. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm Kondori & Murad can guide you through the difficult probate administration process. They'll bring clarity and closure to a loved one's estate. Schedule a free consultation with their probate and estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Later on today, 5 o'clock, 53 minutes out, Danny Cannell joins the show. College football, rookie quarterback class, dealing in the NFL, Heisman race. Looking forward to covering those topics with him. That's at 5 o'clock. But let's get to our Beltway Blitz and start on the ice. Our buddy Steve Wino of the Associated Press helps us do just that. Swino, nationally, there was not a lot of love for the Capitals going into the year. A, what was your expectation? And B, what do you make of 10 points here over the last five games, all wins, four in regulation?
Yeah, GP, there's definitely not a whole lot of expectation externally on this team. And I thought they were a bubble team in or out, just like they were last year. No doubt an improved roster with Pierre-Luc Dubois, with Matt Roy, with Jacob Chychrun, kind of a rebuilt fourth line, a rebuilt blue line, bring in Logan Thompson. My sort of fear was the Devils are better. There are teams in the East who are sort of gotten better, but the Capitals have gotten off to a great start. I mean, they were kind of put in a schedule loss disadvantage in the home opener against the Devils, who were playing their fourth game. Capitals playing their first, couldn't get their legs under them. But once they've gotten everything together, they've gotten offense points from 16, 17 different guys. They've gotten solid goaltending so far. It's still a very early sort of small sample size for this team, but there's a lot to be positive and optimistic about.
So I know what's real and what's not with this start. In other words, I love Tom Wilson more than the next man, but he's not scoring 70 goals this year. You know what I mean? So you could put that in the not category. But what is sustainable out of this start, do you think?
I think the balance on defense, and especially when they get Matt Roy back from this injury that he had in the opener, that this defense is legitimate and John Carlson is not going to have to play 27 minutes a night throughout the season. He's not going to have to play more than any other player in the NHL. Jacob Chychrun is a legitimate number one defenseman of the present and future for this team. I know the Capitals were interested in trying to get him when they got Rasmus Sandin, but he is in the real category. And I think Pierre-Luc Dubois and sort of the Strome Dubois, Hendrix LaPierre down the middle to Nick Dowd is a real sustainable sort of part of this. Yes, Tom Wilson, unsustainable to be on a 60-70 goal pace throughout the season, but I do think a lot of people, Danny, who said that Tom Wilson's contract was bad or that it wouldn't age properly, maybe it won't 4 or 5 years from now, but right now he's still a power forward in this league who can produce at a big level.
Connor McMichael, has 3 goals and 5 assists and 8 points through 6 games. That's the same as what Connor McDavid has done, by the way, in 7 games.
Just a couple of Connors.
I kid because I care, but I will say I do think Mikey's been maybe their best player. Is that crazy?
No, I don't think it's crazy, and certainly has been better than we expected on the wing. Because I remember a couple of years ago with Peter Laviolette that he kept moving McMichael back and forth between center and wing and thought he played better at center and all the responsibilities. But if you train Connor McMichael, instead of trying to be your third-line center of the future, to be your second-line left wing of the present, that might be where he fits in really well. The chemistry on that line with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Tom Wilson has been terrific so far, and Spencer Carberry has kind of put him in the right position to succeed. We're starting to see players, like maybe Hendrix up here struggling a little bit or early in the season, trying to kind of find his way in different line mates and that sort of thing. But Connor McMichael is a year ahead of LaPierre in his development and is that kind of player who the Capitals have been counting on to be part of their core.
How big is the gap between Thompson and Lindgren? Could you park your car or do you need dental floss?
No, dental floss. And my biggest concern long-term of the season is these guys need to stay healthy. And I think this is why Scott Murray and Spencer Carberry are rotating, sort of like the Boston Bruins did last year with Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark, of doing every other game, because you can have $2 million a year combined work really well if their bodies don't wear down, if there's no injuries there. I think it's a perfect 1A, 1B, and 1B, 1A, depending on what day it is. And maybe one of these goalies has a couple bad games, and it turns into to one guy has the hot hand and starts rolling. But this rotation sort of thing is what seemed to capitalize on the vision. And if you can keep this rolling until April, really can work if these guys stay healthy.
Suano, last night, Ovi got an empty netter, so he's got two on the year on pace for 27. He needs 39 to tie Gretzky and 40 to pass him. It's too early to say slow start, but statistically speaking, just two goals with an empty netter through six games, obviously not a fast start. How much of a chance do you give him to break the record this year?
Still, you're saying there's a chance. Like, he does have a chance because this is a guy who has heated up at times, and we saw what he did the second half of last year. I still wouldn't bet the mortgage on that. I still think there's a good chance that he gets between 25 and 30, 35 this year, and to be on the doorstep of getting there. But this is a next season sort of conversation, I think. Look, if somehow Alex Ovechkin breaks this record this year, the Capitals are soaring into the playoffs.
So I know as these lines are, I mean, it was pretty interesting to me that after one game, Ovechkin moved to the right side, right? Like, how much shuffling do you expect early on this season? We haven't noticed. Everything's fine because they're ripped off five straight wins and scoring a million goals a game. But how much do you think there's going to be some shuffling around here early until maybe we kind of get a bit more settled?
Yeah, I think Spencer Carberry, really from the start of camp, was thinking about putting Alex Ovechkin on the right side at age 39, try to give him a little bit less sort of wear and tear and amount of skating he has to do in the defensive zone and take a little bit of load off him. But the way that the roster was put together by Brian McClellan and now Chris Patrick allows movable parts, whether it's Tony Milano in, Jacob Vrana in, out, Connor McMichael can play the left, can play center, Alex Ovechkin can play either side. Alexi Protas can play either side. I think you're going to see a lot of movement in that way. I think the top nine is pretty stuck of what it is, and you have the Radish, Duhaime, and Nick Dowd fourth line. But there's a lot of shuffling that the coaching staff has the ability to do, just given how this roster was constructed.
So, on up, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. Let's talk some Wizards. GP and I will do that. They play the defending champions, Boston Celtics, tonight, GP.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, it's not necessarily about tonight, my friend. It is about the big picture. I am actually pretty focused on the Wizards at this point. Not necessarily in terms of wins or losses, but I want to see Sarr. I want to see Koulibaly. I want to see the newly minted Corey Kispert. I want to see Jordan Poole playing the point. We're basically auditioning assets both to be here and both to be spun for future assets.
Yeah, I have no problem watching the kids play and lose. This is what I wanted, and I see this all the time when fan bases declare and beg for the rebuild. This is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. If you really want to tear it down to the roots, which is what we all asked for,
it's been torn.
This is what is going to happen. You're going to lose a ton of games. They're going to win 12 or 15 or 17 games or whatever it is this season, but starting lineup probably going to look something like Jordan Poole at the point, Bilal Koulibaly, Kyle Kuzma at the two and the three. They'll have Alex Sarr, I would think, at the four with Valanciunas at center. And then I want to see Kispert just got an extension. They've paid him. A little more ability maybe off the dribble, creating his own offense. That would be fun to watch. But the young guys, Bub Carrington,
Keyshawn
certainly on that list. And Keyshawn George may have had the best preseason of any of those guys.
Yeah, he looked better than he did in summer league to me. I was really impressed with what I saw there. So you're 100% right. A couple of veterans to help guide. Remember, Malcolm Brogdon is here. Rashawn Holmes has been around. Marvin Bagley's kicked around for a few different teams as well. But a couple of guys are auditioning, I think, for other places. I think Jordan Poole handling the basketball, where he was much better in the second half of the year after they had kind of a come-to-Jesus moment, it seems like, where there was a times he wasn't particularly serious in the first half. Put the ball in his hands, a lot better results for him. He could probably help a contender, maybe coming off the bench like he did in Golden State. But yeah, to me, this is about the kids. You mentioned them, and I want to see their growth.
Both Koulibaly and Sarr, who missed those final two preseason games, will be good to go for the season opener against Boston tonight, so that will be exciting. Looking forward, though, to seeing how the kids fare in the early going. You get tested right away against a Boston team that wasted no time.
Jumped yeah, they're
out
good.
74-55 halftime lead over the Knicks in the opener when they beat New York, and now they're in D.C. to take on the Wizards. Let's talk football. Our buddy Chick Hernandez of WSA TV9 helps us to do just that. Chick, why don't we begin with Jaden Daniels? Do you think he plays on Sunday?
Well, that's a great question. I'm going to say no. I don't think he'll play. The fact that he wasn't on the field Wednesday, Thursday, they're trying to get it on Friday, I don't think. Now, mentally, he's obviously there, but I don't think so. I just think they have to be really careful, not make a mistake. The The prior franchise did that with a guy, Bobby Three Sticks, and didn't work out so well. It's a whole different situation, but I know that Jaden wants to. There's no question about that, but I don't think so. I think calmer, cooler heads will prevail here.
To that point, because I think I'm leaning in that direction with you, do you think it's like them being conservative and saying, what's really the rush? Let's just be careful, or more that maybe he wouldn't be able to? It sounds like you're leaning toward A, not B.
I think A, not B. And I think they know what's coming down the stretch here with divisional games and all that encompasses. And so, you know, you're going against the Bears team, and you got Marcus Mariota, who's playing in a offense that is more suited to him than any offense he's been in. He did very well the guy didn't take a snap for 68 days and then comes in and does very good work. So I think they feel comfortable with Marcus. And I think maybe you make Jaden the number two. I don't, you know, and maybe that's the case where if we need him, we'll use him. But I just really think they need to be smart in this particular case. Let him heal, because once he's healed and someone teaches that young man how to get down on the ground, for heaven's sake, it'll be a better situation.
What chance do you give him to beat the Bears without Jaden Daniels?
Chance? Oh, I give him a great chance because they have the number two running game in the league. And they will feed B-Rob and Eckler and McNichols the rock. And as I said, Marcus can throw the ball. So I gave him a very good chance. Now, mind you, Caleb Williams is coming on. You know, he's been, he threw four touchdowns last time out 2 weeks ago. They're coming off a bye week, so they'll be well-rested. But I think this team is in a groove right now. I'm talking Commanders. And defensively, they're starting to get that turnover, which is huge. And we'll see. But I think I give him a great chance because they have not proven anything otherwise to me. In previous years, I said, I don't think so. This team has said, hey, we take each week, one week at a time. And it's cliche, but they're doing that.
Do you buy this defense's improvement, or have they just gotten lucky and played some bad teams?
I think it's a combo, but, they weren't making plays, and they're making plays. It's simple as that. I mean, you know, without even Jonathan Allen on that defensive line, the DBs, and obviously the pick six last week. I just think when you talk to them in the locker room, they just talk about both the offensive line and the secondary, about the communication, how good it's been. And it wasn't, and they were telling us that communication was an issue. Now they're saying the communication was really good. If that's the case, then they have to improve.
Chick Hernandez, check him out, WSA TV9 in town. Thank you as always, Chick. We appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you, boys.
You got it. That is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny, covering the teams in town you care the most about. I want to dive into what you just asked him about defensively. That's a great question. How much of the improvement on defense over the last several weeks is based on opponent, and how much is it that they've just gotten better? What's your level of trust in that side of the ball? Next on Grant and Danny. Underrated snack.
I was going to quiz you while you were chewing, give you an extra second.
Okay.
100 points control of the board. Name the artist. You can do it. You know it.
This song?
Yep. This. Some other song that's not playing.
I'm stalling.
I know, Eugene's stalling.
Incredibly underrated snack.
What is it? Peanut butter
pretzels with peanut butter in them.
10 out of 10.
I eat them like once every 8 months. And I always think, why don't I do this more?
They're so good. Eat one. I challenge you.
Good luck.
Yeah.
This song. We're living on a prayer.
Yeah, that's right. How far are we?
Bon Jovi.
Yes!
Thank
yes!
you.
Yes!
Thank you.
Yes! Now, was it Darius or Ryan who helped you?
Neither of them did.
What?
I know Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi.
You do?
It's a George Mason University song.
Why did you have to stall so long? With all the peanut butter pretzel talk?
I didn't realize it
talk?
Was Living on a Prayer until I started singing it.
I see.
Oh, we're halfway.
Yeah.
That's when I went to GMU. The George Mason University.
Mm-hmm.
The college basketball team.
Yeah. They lived on a prayer.
Fresh off of the Final Four.
Sure.
And the band, the Gold, I don't remember what it was, Doc Nix,
the Golden Patriots.
Rush and the Golden Gold, yeah. whatever, the Golden Eagle Gold,
mm-hmm.
they would play that song at like third quarter every game. We'd all go crazy in the student section. Bon Jovi, man.
Bon Jovi.
Don't come at me. Don't come at the king. And if you do, Danny.
You best not miss.
You better not miss.
About it.
How sure are you about Washington's defense right now? That is the question on Grant and Danny. We'll open up the phones. We got Danny Cannell coming your way in 30 minutes to talk college football, the Heisman race. And I want to talk rookie QBs in year one with him. Caleb Williams, maybe, playing Jaden Daniels this week. Bo Nix and how he's faring. Drake May looks really good in New England. It seems like this class is off to an awesome start. So we will talk to him about that coming up at 5 o'clock here on The Fan. But you answer the question you asked Chick.
Yeah.
Are they just playing better matchups, easier competition, or are they improving?
The easy answer is it's both. But if I got to pick one, I still think it's a matchup thing.
I think that's the segment.
Yeah.
Is you've got to pick one over the other.
Because it's cheating. Because I actually do believe it's both, in fairness.
I'm sure they're playing better.
Yeah.
But they played the Browns with Deshaun Watson and the Panthers with Andy Dalton two of the last three games. Isn't that kind of the whole point?
They've played three good offenses this year. And those three offenses had their way. They were comfortable offenses.
Is they that were, Tampa, Cincy, and Baltimore? Baltimore.
They were unfettered, unchallenged. They were relaxed and comfortable and calm. What would you like to call? It's going to work. Oops, I called the wrong play on the play sheet. Doesn't matter. A lot of forward progress coming. They couldn't stop. Now, in fairness, nobody's really stopped those teams, right? Those are good offenses. So if Washington is faced with a good offense, I think they're as helpless as anybody else, right? So what this was my question before the season, and this is one of the few things where you go, this is so much, like everything else with this org, this is even better than I thought. The defense, I don't think, is there. Right, where you got two defensive coaches, a great pedigree, Legion of Boom days to the work Dan Quinn has turned in over the last several years in Dallas and his top lieutenant and Joe Witter now taking charge. A number of defensive additions, right? Some upgrades there in theory with the two defensive tackles holdovers. Obviously now Allen is hurt. But you thought this group is going to be improved. How much, I don't know. Because last year they were atrocious. They started off this season pretty atrocious. And they have played a little bit better. I still happen to think if I got to pick one, which is the bigger factor, maybe that's the way to phrase it. The bigger factor is they've played lesser competition.
Well, here's the argument against that they are improving or that they have arrived in some way, that they are now just much better. The Ravens game happened two games ago.
Mm-hmm.
They gave up 484 net yards to Baltimore. They gave up 7.4 yards per play. Baltimore did whatever it wanted. Ran for 176 net. Threw for 308. They didn't really force the Ravens into any bad decisions. In fact, the only turnover for Baltimore in the entire game, if you remember, was on the opening drive. And it was an interception where Lamar Jackson just misfired. He's good for a couple of those where he just threw it too hot, wide of the target, off the hands of his tight end. Mark Andrews batted up into the air. Mikey Sanders still was Johnny on the spot. That was the only takeaway in that entire game. And otherwise, there's not really punts. You didn't get them off the field. They mm-hmm. had 37 minutes time of possession. That was two games ago. That was, 10 days ago or whatever it
yeah.
is? So I know that two of the last three games have been much better. But if the option is, well, they're just playing inferior, worse offenses, I think that's the whole answer. We've seen it over the last 3 weeks. You played a bad Cleveland team. You looked good defensively. You played a good Baltimore offense. You looked terrible defensively. You played a really bad Carolina offense. You looked pretty good defensively. I don't know. I mean, the only time I've been ultra impressed, I will say, in terms of baking in quality of opponent and them overachieving, because they were great against the Panthers, but I could see that one coming a little bit. They were awesome against the Browns. Deshaun Watson in that game was one of the five worst quarterbacking performances I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Arizona game was really good.
That's their most impressive defensive game to me.
So that you got to, they kept Kyler Murray in the pocket. They didn't really let him run around. They got him off the field a bunch. They shut Marvin Harrison Jr. down after the early drive. They gave him 14 total points. I thought that was kind of a turning point moment maybe. And if not for the Ravens game, maybe I would feel differently. But it's hard to unsee the Baltimore game.
Yeah, I mean, again, the real answer to peel back away the segment is they're playing better. They're also playing better opponents. I mean, to me, if I'm tipping the scales as to which one's more important.
Like more favorable opponents.
Well, that's what I meant to say. Sorry. More favorable for them. That's the bigger deal to me. Like, that's the larger factor. And it doesn't take away from the fact that you're seeing improved play, some smarter play, instead of, you know, just saying, let's trot out, Mike Davis for and see what happens. Well, they've adjusted.
Let's do it
now.
This
it's different.
Way. Yeah. So it's a two-piece of pizza pie.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a pie that came, and we're splitting it.
Yep.
We're just taking out the little cutter, one half for Grant, one half for Danny, mm-hmm. right? What percent do you assign who they're playing, and what percent do you assign that they're better than they were early in the year?
65-35 opponent.
Oh, so it's that big.
It's a big slice. Yeah. Could the improved plays, without question. Like, think about week one against Tampa. They didn't tackle very well. Guys like Bobby Wagner are playing better.
Where are they playing a lot better? I think their secondaries come on big time. Not that they fixed anything. I was on a show talking to Bears fans, mm-hmm. big like video cast today. And a guy was saying, how would you attack Washington? I was like, how much time do you have?
Do you want to do two
sessions?
Spread
it out, yeah. 11 personnel, get all your receivers. You love your receivers over there. Get them all on the field and let Caleb Williams go to work. But if you think about it, since they made the adjustment in Cincinnati where mm-hmm. they went to Sanders still on the outside and they put Noah Igbinoghene in the nickel because they thought that was a better served than Michael Davis didn't work and Emmanuel Forbes, who's fallen out of favor or whatever, did have his first pick this past week. I think Sanders still has been awesome. There's actually a stat I saw via PFF grading. He's been one of the highest graded corners in the entire league the last couple of weeks, and he's playing out of position theoretically. He is supposed to be a nickel. That is what they drafted him to do. That's what they think he is. They don't really want him out wide at corner. That's where he's playing. I think he's done a pretty good job. St. Just obviously got lit up in the Ravens game over and over, but I think he is, for the most part, again, I say this all the time, he's a number two. They're asking him to be a number one. He matches up well with bigger, more physical guys. That was a Zay Flowers, twitchy, mm-hmm. small guy fest where it's going to be a problem, right? So I didn't like that matchup for him anyway. I think he's been getting better as the year goes on. I think Igbinoghene's been okay. That's probably where they've made the biggest strides with the changes they made, and the coaching staff deserves a lot of credit for that.
When they've played bad teams, they've pressured much better. Whether that's a comfort thing, whether that's being willing to send Frankie Louvu, or whether that's, you know, getting leads and pinning your ears back, I don't know the answer.
Louvu went off against the Browns, and then he had another field day against the Panthers.
Yeah, those are his two best games. Coincidentally, they're winning those games, and you don't feel confident that quarterback's going to burn you for doing it. So
the defense was terrible against the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
We said really good against the Cardinals, bad against the Ravens. How do we feel about the Giants? I mean, it's so long ago now, it's week two.
It wasn't terribly impressive, if you recall.
That's a good point.
Right? The Giants moved the ball.
Neighbors did, I think he had 10 for 120 or whatever. But if memory serves, they could not cover Malik Neighbors.
No, they could not.
And Daniel Jones, who was coming off of a game where everyone wanted him benched, ended up being ultra efficient. It was one of his best games of the year.
Yeah, I think that's, if I've got my memory right, I was going to look it up here, but my internet's slow. I think that's the Giants' high point total of the year. Is 21? Have they gone north of that?
I don't know.
It's not that important. But the point is they Washington didn't stop them. This wasn't a Daniel Jones can't breathe. They're just being mauled and annihilated, which is what you usually see with the Giants.
They beat Seattle. They scored 29.
Oh, they scored 29. There you go. So anyway, yeah, that to me wasn't the banner performance. That was that was nice. Washington at least didn't punt. We didn't know what it was going to pretend. We didn't know what this was a harbinger of. But we watched the defense that was up and down the field at a field goal fest. Neither offense was any good, so they couldn't convert. Now we know, in retrospect, hey, actually, that was the beginning of something pretty special with Washington's offense.
Lou is in D.C. on Grant and Danny. Lou, the defensive numbers are trending in the right direction. What does that say more about? Who they've played or that they are getting better on that side of the ball?
I think it's the team that we're playing. I think we've been playing some bad teams with, I guess, bad offense. I think it's because of Jaden and our offense is our defense. I mean, they've given up yards after yards. They've just been lucky finding a way to win games. And, you know, I think I would say more so the teams that we play, they're just bad. They're not good enough beside the Ravens. That's a team that I kind of, you know, I could say that was a team that we went up against and we came up short. But still, I think that the defense got work to do. I wish they could kind of make moves, man. We have a chance, and I just hope they take that opportunity and make a run at it, you know, because, you know, next year is not promised. So
we talked a lot about that earlier in the show, actually. Thanks for the call, bro. this idea of, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where you're short on talent, you're short on weapons and real impact players, you know, should that be something they're considering? And my answer to that is absolutely and unequivocally yes. To his point, when he talks about who they've played, I still think almost shutting a team out is pretty impressive in the NFL. They have not, they meaning Washington, has not shut a team out since 1991. And they almost shut out the Panthers. Now, they've had plenty of games, I'm sure, where they've given up three or seven or whatever, and they gave up seven to Carolina. But if not for this fadeaway, fallaway, Andy Dalton throw down the field into the red zone in the second half, they may have shut out and blanked Carolina 40 to nothing. But you could say, well, that's super impressive. That's hard to do. Look at Carolina's ledger. They only scored 10 against Chicago. They only scored 3 against the Chargers. They only scored 10 against the Saints. And I think the first 2 weeks, New Orleans and L.A. are different because that was Bryce Young and it was just a terrible offense.
Yep.
In the Andy Dalton era of this season, so to speak, and by the way, he's out this week. He got into a car accident and sprained his thumb. So Bryce Young will be starting for them Sunday in the 4 o'clock hour against the Denver Broncos. But with Dalton at quarterback, they'd scored 36, 24, 10, 20, and 7. So I think you got to give them credit because no one else has held them to only 7. And in fact, only one team has held them under 20. They've been much, much more professional, better offensively under Dalton than what they showed against Washington.
And that's my point. Anybody who says, going back to Washington for a second, anybody who says, it's only this. No, it's not. There's a bunch of ingredients in the soup. Now, what to me, the bigger ingredient is our softer opponents. That certainly helps. I mean, go back to 2020. We all know how that went, right? That was a pretty good defense. They weren't great by any stretch of the imagination. They were pretty good. Well, they ended up ranking higher than anybody could ever imagine because you played Ben DiNucci, Ryan Finley, other dudes off the street, somebody from Manassas that we're going to probably meet tomorrow at Uptown Alley played against Washington that year. I mean, it was ridiculous. So they got fat. And that was awesome. And everyone expected big things from the defense. They put an adult quarterback schedule the following year and jumped down to the rankings by 25 spots. So the rest is history. So a big part of it is who you're playing. But there's also no question they have played better. They've tightened some things up. I think a part of this is figuring out who you are. Like the designs of the preseason into week one, that's what they thought. They thought Michael Davis was their best option. They thought Emmanuel Forbes was their best option. They thought this, and that. Those things are not the case now. They're better now than they were then, just on personnel decisions alone. You're worse because you don't have John Allen, but you know Dante Fowler wasn't doing what he did in week one this past week.
True.
So there's improvement. There's guys that are jumping up. Players are absolutely playing better, but it's easier to play better and have people notice it when you're playing somebody crappy.
Dante Fowler, who's got 4.5 sacks on the season at this point. Chase Young and Montez Sweat combined have 4 sacks on the season.
Isn't that interesting?
At this point.
Isn't that fun?
Fowler having broken out. Really, really good dude. I thoroughly enjoyed my conversations with him at training camp, who was very hungry coming into the season and has really balled out these last couple of weeks. Not just on the sacks. I mean, there's several plays where he's noticeable. TFLs slicing into the backfield.
Fourth down play.
Yeah, on a fourth down as well. Next, there is something that I've got to get off my chest that is super annoying to me.
Oh.
Okay? I'm going to tell you what that is.
Okay.
And we might even have time to squeeze in a Ryan Explains It All. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Third and 9 for Carolina. Dalton on the move. He tried to throw it to his own man. He threw it to the other team. Intercepted by Fowler. And he's gonna go. Touchdown, Commanders.
Ian Eagle on the call. CBS of the Commanders wiping the floor with the Panthers. They'll look to make it 2 in a row on CBS with the Chicago Bears in town on Sunday. We still don't know if Jaden Daniels is going to play in the game. Sounds like no practice for him again today. The hope is, according to Adam Schefter, he'll be on the practice field tomorrow. Now, I don't know if that's a report or just him reading the tea leaves of what was said earlier this week, but I would think if he can't practice at all tomorrow, that it's very unlikely that he'll play.
That'd be my guess too, right?
I don't think they'll rule him out tomorrow if he doesn't practice.
Because there's no incentive to do that.
No, like to continue, I don't want to call it a charade, but whatever conversations are going on behind the scenes. But yeah, why not just, if he doesn't practice tomorrow, say he's going to be a game time decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us know at that point, if he couldn't even be limited on Friday, if it was a no-go, that they're just sitting him out for the duration of the week.
Yeah, there's no rule that says you must declare on Thursday that someone's going to play or not play or whatever, right? You take advantage of the rules. So give Chicago something to worry about. Regardless of what they think is going to happen, they have to prepare for the idea that it might happen. That's to your advantage. There's no incentive.
G&D with you on the Fan. 12 minutes from now, we'll talk to Danny Cannell, all things college football, Heisman race. Also want to talk about the rookie quarterbacks as well. Here's something that I have absolutely no patience for, Danny, that has been grinding my gears a little
bit. What's been eating at you?
So I get a lot of these, and there was one particular guy I took the bait on last night. But this annoys me to no end. Alex Ovechkin scored an empty net goal last night.
Uh-huh.
And this guy comes to me and is like, he can't do it legitimately. He's got to score empty net goals, as if he's the first guy in the history of the league to have empty net goals count toward his goal title. And what annoys me about this, and it's just an ignorant thing that stupid people say, so I shouldn't care because I am the king of not letting people sit at the table. But there is this feeling around mostly Canadian, I would say, and or like North American hockey fans.
Mm-hmm.
There's this feeling that Alex Ovechkin breaking this record is going to somehow cheapen it, right? Whether it's empty net goals or having more power play goals or whatever excuse they're going to come up with for why he was able to score more goals than Wayne Gretzky. When the fact is, number one, if you want to talk empty net goals, Gretzky had 56 of them in his career. Ovi has 59 after last night. Negligible. So yes, he has three more. It's a higher percentage as he is 40 goals away from the record, and maybe five of the next 40 or something will be empty netters, who knows. But it is not like it's 70 empty netters to 11 or something ridiculous like that. Even if it was, they all count, but that's not the case at all. They all count.
I'm sorry. I know you're on a roll there. That's a real thing? Like, are someone came at you? Like someone said, Grant's the spokesman for this? Like,
no. They didn't come at me. I'm tweeting about how close he is to the record, and they're just being an annoying troll. But this is, I don't care about the person. I'm never going to do a radio segment based on one person's tweet. Mm-hmm. What I am going to say is this is an actual thought that is out there that you see regularly, which is to say that Alex Ovechkin scoring more goals than Wayne Gretzky is going to be based on, look at his power play goals. What are the even strength percentage numbers? What about the empty net goals? He's going to end up scoring more empty netters. It's all so stupid. Every single goal that Wayne Gretzky ever scored was closer to an empty net goal than a goal in today's NHL. Look at the goalies. They weighed 165 pounds. They wore no pads. Scoring was easier back then than it is now, and it's not particularly close. A 50-goal season now, like Ovi posts in a good year during the prime of his career, is like a 75 or 80-goal season when Wayne Gretzky was playing. So if you want to talk about who actually had it easier and whose goals are cheaper, that's not even close. It is way harder for Alex Ovechkin to score in this era with goalies who are wearing basically, you know, the size of sumo wrestlers by the time they're done padding up between the pipes. But I just see some of these arguments like, oh, he scores so many empty netters. No, he doesn't. He has scored essentially the exact same number of empty netters as Wayne Gretzky scored. Oh, well, it's easier for him to score. By what metric? You're insane. What you're saying makes
That's
no
crazy.
Sense. So just very, very annoying to me. Let's call it what it is. Most of these people don't want to see him break the record because either they're a hockey fan that's not a Capitals fan. They're probably in markets on the East Coast where they like the Bruins or the Penguins or the Flyers or whatever it is. Or a lot of people, you know this from just being a hockey fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a Canadian hockey person, you're less inclined to like the European brand of the game. You're not rooting for the Russian guy. You know, whatever it is, you got some other thing that you care about. But don't come at me and try to pretend like Ovechkin is cheapening this thing. If he wins it, he is breaking an unbreakable record at a time where scoring is harder and more complicated than it has been. So relax on that is what I would say.
Yeah, there's irrefutable data that supports this conclusion. It's harder now to score than it was then. Goals per game, team goals per game. The game now it's always been a more global game than maybe than the NBA was certainly at certain points, or the NFL is now, et cetera. But it's not to the degree that it is at this point. You know, where the world, anywhere that's cold enough to have ice, you got players now in the NHL, basically, right? I mean, it's a truly global game. Edmonton was a dominant juggernaut, and this isn't take away from Wayne Gretzky. I saw him play. That's the greatest player ever. Nothing Ovechkin does is going to change that, by the way.
Yeah.
When Ovi tops him in goals, that's going to be remarkable. Wayne's going to sit atop that points list. He'll be there for some time. He's got more assists than anybody else has points, basically. Like, that dude is playing with 5 Hall of Famers at all times. They were destroying people, those Edmonton teams. They were great. It was a juggernaut. It was must-see TV. But it's a different game. It was odd man rush to odd man rush. That's what the game was at that point.
Ovi's already the greatest goal scorer in league history, in my opinion. And he certainly will
based on what we're talking about in terms of goals per game. Yeah.
Again, I posted a picture when I tweeted about this last night. At Grant H. Paulson, Twitter and Instagram, but the goaltenders used to wear, I mean, you're familiar with their gear, right?
Yeah.
When they wore like the Jason mask for a helmet instead of what they wear now. Like, look at this guy. Look at this little guy who's sitting here as the goalie taking up like 1/6 of the cage.
Because those were the early masks as opposed to like the full, you know, headgear that's now. But I'm saying
look at the pets.
No, I understand. But like the guys weren't wearing masks for the start of Wayne's career, basically. Like it wasn't uniform to have helmets on. Like, and again, that's not to take away from Wayne Gretzky.
But
you go back and look, during Gretzky's career, teams would average, just average, a regular team on a given night, on a Tuesday, is scoring 4 goals a game. Now, over most of Ovi's career, it's been in the mid-2s. Like, sorry about it. It's unequivocal. Yeah.
There's just no time in the day to spend dealing with that. And I hope when you guys see it or hear it, shoot it down. Because it's beyond outrageous. It's so ridiculous. He is taking a much more difficult road to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you would not just say, way to go, but you would say the opposite, which is, oh man, he's doing it the easy way. What are you talking about? Have you seen the difference in scoring a goal now versus then? Go back and look at the goal he scored to move to number one all time versus the goals that Ovechkin scores along the way. Give me a break. We will talk to Danny Cannell next, right at the top of the hour here on Grant and Danny. And also, let's give away a pair of tickets to Disturbed as well, right here at the top of the hour on G&D on the Fan.